Welcome to the AIM News Podcast. This is episode 37 for November 10th, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Nietzsche would be laughing. This week's controversy is still, and again, the London Book Fair, freshly arisen after the news that the London Book Fair organizers won't be doing it for 2018, and yet another example of this trend of bitter and intransigent conflicts between factions. Factions that agree on an overwhelming number of issues, but decide to speak fire to each other based on a small set of differences, like how many patriarchs can dance on the head of a pin. If we take this trend seriously, and it seems unavoidable, then where do we go from here? There are some projects that have so far avoided the bitterness of these anarchist-style splits. They tend to be small projects with a more closely defined set of standards, projects that explicitly or implicitly do not attempt to appeal to a wide swath of folks, anarchist or not. There are currently small conferences, small distros, small groups of various sorts that are either so bound by friendship or so clear in their values, or both, that the issues brought about by clashes of orthodoxy won't come up. These projects may be judged heretical by outside groups, but it won't matter or will matter less because of the already existing parameters of the project. For those anarchists who are not trying to proselytize, who are not trying to spread the good word to the masses, this breakup of big tent projects will be less disturbing or disruptive, but it's not a triumph. Small projects benefit as well as suffer from big projects and will have to find new ways of informing newcomers about their presence and awesomeness. Fresh eyes bring confusion and changes in focus that are important. So we're probably looking at the groups that last through this time tending to get more rigid and isolated. But there are ways to challenge that people will discover or rediscover, like games and humor, among other things. A few weeks ago, the topic of the week was about local projects that people would like to see in their area, and a number of those were ones that could work in this time of purges. Single-issue groups, which can be included projects like Critical Mass, Food Not Bombs, and Prison Abolition Work, can be strong, if eventually boring, for exactly this reason. Anarchy means anything these days, from $400 jackets at boutiques, to Maoist analysis, to simple anti-fascist activism. With that kind of spread, it was inevitable that at the places of the most intense intersection, there would be fights. These fights, as stated, are the anarchist version of splits, and on some level are a normal part of free association. The issue, of course, comes from factions wanting the full weight of the church behind them, which none of them will get, as there is no anarchist pope. There have, as has also been noted, usually been fights at anarchist book fairs, although usually not involving groups of 30 against one or two. Anarchist book fairs were arguably best and most valuable when it was hard to find other anarchists, when anarchist texts were precious and rare. They have always played an important social role, but what it means to be social is changing these days. We're in the middle of that transition, and who knows what social institutions will work best during or after that change. What's new this week? To a trodden pansy, remembering Louis Ling, from Plain Words. This is a brief text, named from a poem by Ling, about the Haymarket Affair, and Ling, who was one of the anarchists who was executed as a result. Executions that were the defining moment for anarchists of that era. Multiple people became anarchists as a result of this example of stateliness, including notably Wolterine de Clare. Ling did have one of the most confrontational responses to the proceedings. Quote, "After a notoriously prejudicial trial, the judge sentenced seven of the Haymarket defendants to death by hanging and Oscar Niebe to 15 years in prison. At his sentencing, Ling remained defiant, proclaiming, 'I die happy on the gallows. So confident am I that the hundreds and thousands of to whom I have spoken will remember my words. When you shall have hanged us, then they will do the bomb throwing. In this hope do I say to you, I despise you. I despise your order, your laws, your force-propped authority. Hang me for it." Unquote.
Moscow, Russia, illegal anarchist demo for the centenary of the revolution. From Insurrection News. This is an announcement of anarchists in the streets of Moscow, which sounds like a dramatically scarier action than a similar one in the U.S. Quote, "Remember, the real social revolution of liberation, which the anarchists and revolutionaries of the past dreamed of, is not left in the past, but is waiting in the future." Revolution is the only solution to solve all the contradictions and problems that the capitalist system generates. The struggle against individual manifestations of capitalism and the state, such as poverty, corruption, police lawlessness, and the arbitrariness of the authorities, have no prospects unless we take into account the true source of social ills, the state and capitalism. Otherwise, when trying to solve social contradictions by changing government without destroying the state and creating a new democratic system, new thieves and dictators will simply replace the old ones, which is proven by the experiences of the two revolutions of 1917. And of course, this needs to be taken into account in the future. End quote.
Germany, Greece. Message from Regeier Street Comrades in Berlin to the Insurrection Festival in Athens. From Insurrection News. A response to a call from the Insurrection Festival in Athens, Greece. It's an assessment of some things that people are doing or trying to do in Berlin. Quote, over the last couple of years, because of the intensity of our actions and the repression of the cops, this process has been started in the Regeier Street. Our actions do not simply concentrate on material violence, they are trying to destroy the social norm and values. In that sense, to change the meaning of property, safety, and fear, as well as work and competition. In Berlin, it is forbidden to organize a free market where everything can be given away for free. It is forbidden to play music in public spaces or just gather in the street with many people. It might be allowed if one requests permission from the police. We did all these things without having any permission, and every time we did, the police came and attacked us. As a response, many stones were thrown toward the cops and their cars. Maybe the police occupation in Exarchia is more violent, but in Friedrichshain, they are more close. The occupation force is waiting in front of your door. Another way of preventive counterinsurgency in Berlin is, next to repression, the integration. By using various politicians and, quote, good cops, the administrations are always coming up with roundtables. The idea is to bring inhabitants from the Friedrichshainer Nordkreis together with representatives from the administration offices, so an image could be created in which the politicians listen to the concerns of the public and all parties involved come up with a solution together. This way, there is no need for real resistance anymore, and social peace can be restored. We must fight the integration like we fight the repression, unquote.
London Book Fair will not happen in 2018. From Freedom UK. One of the two post-controversy missives from the London Book Fair organizers. This one is a response to an open letter complaining about the London Anarchist Book Fair organizing, and is one more indication that book fairs are on their way out. Being in public becomes more and more of a minefield. This statement reflects some of the many name-calling, polarized, simplistic conflicts that have been foisted on people these days. Quote, what hurts us most is we know a lot of you. A number of the signatories of the open letter are groups we know and have worked with over the years, sometimes for many, many years. Yet not one of you has tried to contact us as individuals or as the Book Fair Collective to ask our views before you signed the open letter, even though some people appear not to have read all of it before signing. We thought of many of you as friends. We were obviously wrong. We guess it's easy to sign a statement. It's a lot harder to actually talk to people and try to work things out. We are also tired of being told what to do. We are told to ban people. We are told to have this or that policy. We are told this or that group can or cannot have stalls. We are told we shouldn't have a certain venue. We are constantly told we get it wrong. Unquote. When doing things in public becomes self-defeating, what will we do next?
Political prisoner birthday poster for January 2017 is now available. 2018. Many prisoners were born in January. Some of the folks on this poster are Herman Bell, Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, Jeremy Hammond, Jason Hammond, and Marius Mason. Inspiration and information for writing folks inside.
Texts on the recent repression against autonomous media projects in France from Bordered by Silence. Quote, over the past couple months, there have been several acts of repression aimed at autonomous media project in the territory controlled by the French state. Below are two translated texts dealing with it. The first discusses criminal charges brought against an anarchist comrade for texts published on the long-running anarchist website. This site recently decided to stop publishing while making it clear that it's not because of the repression they face, but rather with the limits of counter-info projects and dissatisfaction with how much importance the internet has given in the anarchist space. I can feel that one. The comrade's trial is this Wednesday, November 8th, in Paris. The second is from Indemedia Antes and their decision to ignore a legal demand from the French Cyber Crime Division, ordering them to remove communiques about attacks and announcing contingency plans in case their site is blocked in the coming days. This repression follows on the German government's recent decision to shut down Indymedia Linkshuten, and in the context of France, where the current government has bypassed the usual democratic steps to write parts of the state of emergency that has been in effect for a year and a half permanently into criminal law. Some see this as a broadening of the repressive measures developed for use against Islamic groups to include anarchists and social movements, end quote.
Red and Black October, an anarchist perspective on the Russian Revolution for its 100th anniversary, from Black Rose Federation, the second of three texts this week on anarchists responding to this centenary. This piece is a mix of analysis and historical events and leans, of course, towards anarcho-syndicalism. Shocking, I know. Quote, the editors of Golos Truda, who included Volin and Maximov, among others, denounced the ongoing war and called on Russian conscripts to desert the war effort, thus providing the possibility of an example to the rest of the world's soldiers, who in unison could ignite a world revolution. The editors considered it their first duty, our most sacred task, to take up this work immediately in our own land by opening new horizons for the laboring masses and helping them in their quest. In their initial issues, they emphasized the importance of continuing and deepening the revolution. We say to the revolution, to the Russian workers, peasants, soldiers, revolutionists, above all, continue the revolution, continue to organize yourselves solidly, and to unite your new organizations, your communes, your unions, your committees, your Soviets, continue with firmness and perseverance, always and everywhere, to participate more and more extensively and more effectively in the economic activity of the country. Continue to take into your hands, that is, into the hands of your organizations, all the raw materials and all the instruments indispensable to your labor. Continue to eliminate private enterprises. End quote, unquote.
Other Ojavas, echoes of the Free Commune of Barbaka, from CrimeThink. Quote, the autonomous region of Rojava has gained international visibility as a beacon of struggle against the Islamic State and other forms of autocratic power, an experiment in which many anarchists are currently participating. Yet Rojava is not the only region in which a struggle for self-determination has expanded and to open a path towards total liberation. In North Africa, in the region of Kabylia, an ethnic minority oppressed by racism and state oppression has initiated a series of revolts comparable to what the Kurds have accomplished in Rojava and Zapatistas in Chiapas. Throughout decades of struggle, they have established zones of autonomy and built bridges to others in revolt, in hopes of bringing out a genuine emancipatory social revolution. Read on to learn about this underreported struggle, end quote. This is a translation of a piece written by an Algerian who collected stories in the region. At the end is a reading list for even more information.
Nicholas A. Poifus, Anarchy in Athens, an Ethnography of Militancy, Emotions, and Violence, from Anonymous. Gabriel Kuhn briefly reports on a new book about anarchists in Athens. Quote, Apoifis has talked to many people, stayed in various squats, and participated in numerous protests. He has a solid background in anarchist theory, experience as an activist, and, as a third-generation Greek-Australian, a good command of the Greek language. These aspects combined form a solid ground for researching contemporary Greek anarchism. Interestingly enough, the results of Apoifis' research confirm common perceptions of the milieu. Little interest in anarchist history and theory, strong insurrectional and anti-organizational tendencies, and plenty of street fighting bravado. Apoifis makes sure to reference the prefigurative politics that the anarchists of Athens also engage in, including, quote, feeding the hungry and poor, protecting immigrants from fascist beatings, and trying to carve out an autonomous political, social, and cultural space. Yet he concedes that militant protest actions are key elements in the ongoing construction and reconstruction of Athenian anarchist and anti-authoritarian collective identity. Unquote.
Anarchism Through the Silver Screen, from CrimeThink. This is a piece remarking on the surprising plethora of anarchist-themed movies coming out in South Africa all of a sudden.
South Korea.
Okay. And descriptions of them. Quote, South Korea 2017. The new year arrived with a surge of demonstrations expressing disgust at the state of the nation. Is this a country? Went a popular slogan. The state apparatus played for a time by starting the impeachment process. Aspiring politicians worked hard to frame the events as a democratic revolution. What an oxymoron. And the massive demonstrations were pacified, accepting the authority of the police and the ordinary violence of daily life under this system. Ben, pro-regime reactionaries gained momentum, fighting with the police in the name of law and order and patriotism. Nevertheless, perhaps fearing that the ruling order was becoming too unstable, the court announced the impeachment of the president, who is now facing charges. Elections took place, raising a new government to power. Things are back to normal, it seems. However, the theater screens have been filled with more revolt than usual. Indeed, this summer, at the theater in my small Korean town, among the few movies presented, I could watch back-to-back two Korean movies featuring anarchists in the spotlight, preceded by a preview for yet another movie about the Gwangju Uprising. End quote. A fun read.
100 years after the Bolshevik counter-revolution, from Crime Think. The third of the three articles on this topic this week, this is a better version of the story than the one from Black Rose. Quote, on November 7th, the Bolsheviks and their allies rose up in Petrograd, beginning the Second Revolution. On November 8th, a detachment of anarchist sailors from Kronstadt, led by the anarchist Zaleznyakov and in coordination with the Bolsheviks, captured the Winter Palace, abolishing the provisional government. The same Zaleznyakov was also chosen to lead a detachment that seized and abolished the Constituent Assembly in January of the following year. He led a flotilla and then an armored train battalion against the White Army during the Civil War. Though he protested the Bolsheviks' imposition of hierarchical measures and the restoration of Tsarist officers within the Red Army, he was too valuable as a military strategist to cast aside. The Bolsheviks invited him to rejoin them. He had gone to Crimea to fight against the Whites in an autonomous formation, and they assigned him the command of the armored train campaign to halt the advance of the White general, Denikin. He died in combat in 1919. Subsequently, it became clear that the Bolsheviks did not coordinate with anarchists out of a spirit of solidarity. On the contrary, they systematically assigned anarchists the most dangerous roles so that they would assume the physical and political consequences if things went poorly. Unquote. History is full of communists killing anarchists. Perhaps the writings on these histories will inform some modern alliances. Probably not, though.
Forums worth noting. A critic on trans versus turf and the constructivism. The constructivism. Circle A critic has burst onto the A-News scene as the first respectful yet critical voice to take on Emil, writing posts that are just as long as Emil's but that engage with topics and respond to feedback. This forum was started from an A-critic response to the brouhaha at the London Anarchist Book Fair. It's a very good breakdown of the issues of competing identity issues, in this case, TERFs, trans-exclusive radical feminists. I think that's trans-exclusionary. Or anyone who's gotten this far without knowing the acronym, and trans folk. Quote, your average TERF defines woman primarily on the basis of experience, or structural distribution of experience, aka privilege, power, oppression, which is generally how ID polls today construct all their categories. Of course, the experience stems from having a vagina, but they don't usually claim that women are essentially biologically women because they have vaginas, or chromosomes, wombs, breasts, etc. Trans activists, from what I can tell, define woman on the basis of experience too, but not specifically the experience of sexism or underprivilege, more on the internal experience of feeling you're a woman, possibly the ego ideal or persona in the Freudian sense. The imaginary sense of who you are, which is always imaginary, even for cis people. But they seem to treat being trans on the same basis that TERFs treat women, and the choice of which identity is attached to power is crucial in the ID poll climate as to whose rights count more. There's also a split among trans activists between constructivist versus transmedicalist, or
too cute versus true scum,
which roughly comes down to people who believe all gender is constructed and anyone who identifies as trans is trans, and someone who believes that only people who have diagnosable gender dysphoria or have thought they're the opposite gender all their lives are really trans. The issue between the two groups of trans activists are very similar in their internal structure to the disputes between trans and TERFs, except they focus on the definition of transgender instead of the definition of woman. Unquote. Looking forward to more from A Critic, if perhaps in more bite-sized chunks.
Report back from the LA Book Fair.
A report back from one of the LBC tablers on the first day of the LA Book Fair, which ended in ignominy and lies from the book fair organizers. Quote, there were plenty of people at the park simply interested in what the hell was going on and who we, both the book fair and LBC, were. We gave them copies of Black Seed, and not a single one opened it and felt an image was racist at all. It's not, and the people who would see that in the picture says more about them than anything. You would think from some people's discussions that everybody there was of one mind and wanted the book fair gone. Obviously, that wasn't the case. After we bounced, we could see the place was in utter chaos as those in the park began fighting amongst themselves over what they had just witnessed. It was truly all against all, unquote.
Documentary films about Greek anarchist movement. This is just a list of links to documentaries on Greece, some in Greek, with very brief descriptions, but it is an interesting use of the forum space.
Media, The Best Years of Our Lives, legendary documentary on riots in Greece during the 90s. This is a link to a sign-in page on YouTube that presumably shows video by Chaos Limited of the historic riots in Greece.
Sprout Distro, zines and pamphlets published in October 2017. From Sprout Distro. This semi-monthly announcement features the following titles. The Devil's Night, on the ungovernable spirit of Halloween. The Kate Shipley Library Bulletin number 91. Anarchist Wallpaper, number 3. The Lexicon series, produced by Cindy Milstein at the Institute for Anarchist Studies, famously commented on by the Words Pamphlets series, produced by Little Black Cart. The Transmetropolitan Review, number 7, out of Seattle. Paper Chained on Prisons and the Prison Affected. And the Phoenix Trail pamphlet that was mentioned in last week's podcast.
Podcasts, The Final Straw Radio, a conversation with Cascadia Forest Defenders. An hour long. The interview is done by William Goodenough. Sean starts at 4:18 and talks about his newly published book, Last Act of the Circus Animals, how it came to originally be written by Travis Washington and John 10 years ago this year, and some of the responses he's gotten from around the world. Per usual, Sean is funny and interesting. The Cascadia Forest Defenders interview starts at 11 minutes. It discusses basics of defending woodlands, terminology, and past and future actions, and the ongoing continual hypocrisy of governmental organizations that people think are supposed to defend public space.
Anarchy Radio, 11/07/2017. Always an hour, always radio friendly. Jay-Z gives thumbs up to the new movie Lucky. Mass shootings. People being uninterested in ideas is a problem. Just ask Adorno. Plastic pollution, opioid epidemic, homelessness, climate refugees, fashion models, more and more sullen, overwhelming growth of tech corporations, steering wheels coming off, 40 million fire extinguishers not working, spontaneously combusting BMWs, revolutionary communist party as part of Antifa now, occupation in Corfu between Italy and Greece, anti-fish farming actions. Jay-Z continues to explicitly say that everyone knows what's going wrong and what to do about it, and just don't do it.
The Hotwire number 12, November 8th, 2017, 32 minutes. Anti-speciesist actions around the world, prison reform happens in response to prisoner activism, church shooting hypocrisy, conspiracy theories, aka November 4th, reflections on time as an imposition on life, that has been said more extensively and poetically by Wolfie Landstreicher, Feral Fawn, and even Bob Black. It would be nice if some of the multiple links that Hotwire advertises would be to original content that existed before CrimeThink did. Surely that erasure of previous projects and thinkers is one of the, quote, authoritarian methods that close the way to freedom, unquote. At 24:30, a brief conversation with anarchists in Brazil about Operation Arebo.
Topic of the week, privacy. As many of you know, we at anarchistnews.org have attempted to preserve your privacy since our founding. The core server does not maintain logs except when troubleshooting and then they're removed. The Drupal software at the heart of ANews has the Indie Media Log Clearing plugin installed and removes the logs every 20 minutes. We, as a rule, try to remove legal name information. Our question is, does anyone care? I know a few diehard technophiles will jump in and talk about how their privacy is the most important thing they own, and we're fools to even entertain any other option, but is it true? As far as I can tell, a lot more anarchy talk, which is at the heart of this project, is happening on Facebook than here.
Even as we've become more balanced and not run by one person, there seems to be an increasingly engaged audience that only talks about changing in the world in the most heavily surveilled internet space ever constructed. Yes, there are outliers, but many, if not most users of the internet, seem perfectly fine giving up their privacy for ease of use and lack of friction. Does this mean that our goals of a broad conversation are misplaced because corporations are going to be better web designers than DIY projects? Or does it mean that, perhaps, privacy is a bourgeois conceit that makes no sense in this new world we live in? And, yeah, so what are your thoughts?
I think about privacy a lot, being a technologist and somebody who writes software and uses a lot of software. There's two schools of thought. There's like, I feel like there's radicals who believe that the websites that they visit that host their radical projects should be responsible for their privacy. And then there's other people who feel that like their privacy should be this personal thing, that if like you're not using Tor, you're not using VPN, so that's your own damn fault.
Right.
And I'm not going to call them out, but a very well-known anarchist project, when I approached them once and saying like, hey, you're using Google Analytics on your website, they basically told me they're like, if people are concerned about their security and privacy, then they should be using Tor. They shouldn't expect that from us, because they're going to use the tools that are best suited for, you know, tracking how many hits their pages are getting.
Sure. Anarchist used an open source software analytics tool for a little while and got called out in a similar vein. I mean, I think the advantage probably of the project you're talking about, and I think this is the advantage in general, is if you have no comments or you have no way to really publicly dialogue with a website, of course, these sorts of conversations are going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I am more in the camp of like, I think people should be taking care of their own privacy. Like, but it does feel good when projects go out of their way to essentially make things less accessible for when, you know, those servers eventually get, caught by the feds. Like, for example, RiseUp.
I was going to say there were some critics of when the RiseUp raid happened. What are your thoughts about that in hindsight?
What can you remind me of the criticisms?
It's been a couple years now, so it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
But perhaps there weren't actually criticisms of how they rolled out at the moment. I think perhaps the criticisms that come to mind most are that they've taken money to develop software that can be used by government agencies. But ostensibly, anyone who works in open source software could be doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that those who build the tools that are used by radicals shouldn't make the cops' jobs easier. I mean, Facebook is already doing that for us. I think it's very silly for people to host riots on using Facebook events. I see that all the time, and I will refuse to join events that I think that are going to result in things that might be seen as interesting to the state, because I don't want my name attached to it. But a lot of people will not even blink an eye and click like and click yes, I'm going to this thing that's going to eventually turn into a riot.
To chase that thought exercise a little bit.
Yeah.
So when we talk about privacy, we are talking about sort of like, what's the relationship that I have to the state versus what would it actually look like to be dangerous to the state?
Yeah, definitely.
In other words, like, so just as an example, talking about a riot, right? Like, I mean, I feel pretty strongly that if you're going to a riot, and especially if you're willing to talk about it publicly, that riot probably isn't going to take down the state or do anything more appreciable than a minor felony.
So then
to take that experiment one step further, if the state knows that you
participate in minor felonious activity, I'm not sure how interesting that is to them. Unless there actually were a social movement, or there were, like, in other words, the context in which there were roundups or people mm-hmm. getting caught and getting charged, to me it seems like there's like a phase shift where we're talking about privacy on the one hand, which I think I agree with this post privacy. It does seem to be like the end game of liberalism. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, if we're talking about what would it actually look like to be dangerous in the context of like a revolutionary moment or something, and it seems like a revolutionary moment or revolutionary activity without a movement. I don't know. I guess I've said what I think.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just reminded of, like, was it last year that everybody was checking in to Standing Rock? And there was this sort of meme that was going around that, like, they were like, oh, the cops are seeing who's at Standing Rock by seeing who's checking in mm-hmm. and then going to attack them. So everybody on the internet is like is going to be checking in now, and then it's going to confuse the cops, which I think in retrospect is total bullshit. Like, I think it was a meme that got out of control, and like the checking in was you know, collectivism at its, like, with a radical flag around it. Like, I don't think that it helped anybody stay out of trouble, but like that, those things happen, and people have these weird ideas around like how it works, that like they're probably not looking at check-ins, they're probably asking Facebook for location data. And it's like the privacy, by the time you're caring about your privacy, if you haven't started to think about it from like the inception of your internet life, you've already failed. You've already been tracked. And like Facebook is notorious for this, in that they actually have something called Facebook Pixel. And Facebook Pixel follows you around the internet, and websites install Facebook Pixel on their websites, so they can report back to Facebook how long you've stayed on websites, what images you look at, what articles you're reading, what ads you click on, and then bringing that back to use that for advertising data. And most news sites do this. Lots of like commerce sites do this. And so it's like, it's pretty commonplace. And so by the time you've joined the platform, you've already lost.
Just to give it a little technical aside, Firefox has recently launched a brand new plugin extension that I strongly recommend people use for exactly this purpose. It's called Containers.
Okay.
And what it actually does is it allows you to surf the web using containerized tabs, basically. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you could have a tab that's where you do your shopping. So if you're being tracked by cookies at Amazon, you all those cookies would no longer be relevant outside the shopping tab. And so similarly, you could do your social networking in a container. I personally do social networking in a different browser than I do my regular website viewing on. And so it is worth mentioning that there are some ways in which you can work around some of the particularly like hidden privacy stuff.
Definitely. There's a great project by the EFF called Privacy Badger. That's a plugin for Chrome and Firefox, I believe. And it basically tells you and blocks any outside trackers for websites you're going to. Now, in some regards, this makes the website unusable, and you're like, okay, well, I can't watch the videos, I can't click on the content. I think it's very similar to people who block JavaScript.
Yeah.
It's just like sometimes the internet just doesn't work. So,
well, and that is you know, obviously central to this question, and the reason why sort of these things don't happen is as soon as you cross that line between being unusable and preserving privacy, you know, mm-hmm. you really do lose a huge amount of your audience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and
so if you were going to build a website today, mm-hmm. what special things would you do outside of what Anarchist News does already?
Trying to think.
Perhaps no commenting at all.
Yeah, no. I mean, I feel like any sort of the social graph. you know, I've had ideas for websites of social graphing, and you know, and that's essentially what it is. And even anarchist news kind of acts as a social graph in a way, because you see a trend of what kind of people post on what articles, and like the tone, the language, which people are, you know, pretty bad about, like changing their language from post to post. Just that's how people are. But you know, I would like to avoid creating social graphs that are accessible to the outside. And you know, I have this idea of a good social network would be one that is opt-in on both parties. So content can only be seen by people who are each other's friends. Hmm. And so it kind of blocks out this idea that you can kind of meet people outside of some sort of real world or previous interaction. And so you kind of have to verify, like, oh yeah, I know you from a previous interaction. You can now see my content, and then I can see yours. Because like right now, Facebook, you know, yes, you have your friends, but you also see the things that your friends' friends post on their pages. And I think that is where, like, we can have people just go down rabbit holes of like, expanding social graph and learning way too much information about people. I like to treat the social media platforms with as much disdain as possible. And I think making them more more opt-in and more tailored to the kind of content you want, as opposed to just being fed whatever.
Although I will say, I mean, you know, we share a couple of different characteristics here. One is that we both use Facebook,
yes,
pretty much on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I think your profile tends to be semi-public, yes?
Yeah, but it's definitely more along. It's rarely does it take itself seriously, and that's intentional. I have had people tell me that.
Why does that matter?
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Because I think the genuineness, I think, it encourages people to use the platform more. And I would like to see people to use the platform less. So being an absurdist and sort of pushing for...
Do what I say, not what I do?
Yeah. I mean, I have friends who have told me, like, oh, I can't follow you on Facebook anymore because you shitpost too much. And I'm like, well, does it make you use the platform less? And they're like, yes. And I was like, great. Like, you know, like today, Mark Zuckerberg had some event. And I used that as a way to, like, post some absurd comments to his wall. And it's like, people pay attention to when, like, the social graces break down. And I think especially in Facebook, people expect a dialogue, and it's fun to mess with that. I don't know. But this is kind of getting outside of the realm of privacy, though.
Well, except it doesn't, because, you know, in both of our cases, we have different semi-public profiles that are on some level different than who we are as human beings.
Yeah.
And that isn't it's sort of an aspect also of anarchist news, right? Where I'm quite sure... That Emil is a different human being than... the internet presence known as Emil.
Yeah.
And, you know, so obviously it is worth talking about what do pseudonyms look like in 2017 versus 1997.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm sure that you were probably still playing around with this shit when you were very young.
Yeah, and, I mean, I was on AOL in chat rooms talking with people I've never met before. And, you know, it's like they never knew me. They never knew who I was. I was a screen name. Yep. I want to talk about this real quick. Why Facebook is especially terrible when it comes to social media is that it's trying to tie our real world government identities to those people who we are online, and I think that that's a problem. I feel that like the internet has always existed in a space where you can be another person, and I think, like, you know, as terrible as it is, we can't deny that 4chan's ability to be anonymous is its power, is its ability to say these things without repercussions.
Sure.
And it's like, as anarchists, do we want to be able to say things without repercussions? I feel that some anarchists feel that we shouldn't. We should always be accountable for what we say. We should always stand behind the words we say, and that the words and the positions we take are always our true selves. And like sometimes there's sometimes it's tactical for that not to be the case. And I feel, yeah, like anarchism has a rich history of pseudonyms, has a rich history of anonymization. And we're losing that by committing ourselves to these social media platforms that force us to be ourselves.
I have to admit that there's at least a dozen different people who I have no idea who they are on Facebook because they're using some sort of aggressive pseudonym.
Yes.
And the truth is that I have no relationship to them.
Definitely.
I just don't even sort of pay attention to what they do or say. Other than when they're, you know, really overtly hostile. because there's just no traction.
Yeah.
In other words,
It's a line to take. It's like, do you value, you know, I've definitely met people on the internet who I become good friends with, and I meet them in person, and then, you know, we're IRL friends. And I think that that's fine. It's a weird line to toe. It's like, and I'm definitely in the middle of it. I am not a fully anonymous person online. But also, you know, I have two Facebook profiles because I have a job in tech.
Right.
And like my coworkers started adding me, and I was like, no, let's section you off into this part of the internet, and like you can get the baby photos.
I only friend people I work with after we no longer work together.
I mean, that's super smart. I feel like, being an anarchist online, you know, some people like to champion their radical position to their friends and family. I don't. I feel that I see no usefulness in it. And if I want to have those conversations in person, I will. But, you know, there's, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
This is my private life. I've got no friends to fear. I've got no problems, no cross to bear. If you can find me, come get me out of here.
The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't end up reading, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, how has anarchism and radical politics changed over the past 28 years? I've been kind of curious for a while as to how society has changed over the course of my life, but this is a pretty overwhelming subject matter. My assessment, given the shit I've read and my limited memories, is that society mostly hasn't changed over the past 28 years, except for now it's harder for people in the U.S. to make money or climb the social ladder, and the hyper-expansion of the internet and the use of smartphones. Other than that, I don't think things are really that different than they were when I was younger. Given that you all are much more intimately familiar with the anarchist and radical political scene, what has changed about it over the past 28 years? How is identity politics and all the blame gaming different then from what it is like now? Answer 1. I'm just speaking for the U.S. Maoism is more intense and accepted now than it was 28 years ago, although it has waxed and waned over the past 50 years at least. Anarchist is the cool label now, as much as there is a cool political label. 28 years ago, it wasn't. Punk is less relevant in anarchist circles as a foundation from which people came into anarchy, for example, to the serious detriment of anarchist thinking, as far as I'm concerned. And environmental issues are undeniably on everyone's mind today in a way that they were not 28 years ago. Obviously, how and what has changed depends on what plane one is looking at. Western Civ is still Western Civ, but there are changes too. Answer 2. Things are different, but things are also remarkably familiar feeling. Echoing the first answer, there is a shift in demographics and focus. As a young person, I'm specifically thinking probably about ninth grade, 1990 to present, I came to anarchy because the cool kids, it was an alternative school, had Circle A's on their skate shoes and binders, and a certain punk singer in a band I'd been slowly getting into for a few years had boldly stated that he was an anarchista. I didn't even totally know what that meant, and as far as I knew, the band Black Flag was named after an insecticide. Identity politics in that scene were a thing, Riot Girl, etc., but they felt less authoritarian even while the feminism was still clearly second wave, white college-educated feminism, not that I saw it that way then, and the depth and breadth of analysis around queerness, race, etc. left something to be desired. Antifa, or its U.S. predecessor, Anti-Racist Action, was a thing, and the same criticisms would have held true then, though no one I knew was making them. And for reasons that led me to be maybe more sympathetic than some to the myopic perspective of Antifa, I knew real people who went from punk to Nazi skin in about three moves on the moral chessboard. Nazis still rolled into punk shows looking for fights sometimes. I know people only a bit older than me who were involved in drive-bys, both doing and on the receiving end, related to combating Nazis. The memory of the shootout between the FBI and Robert Matthews of the Order was still fresh, even though it was half a decade previously. Richard Butler was holding court just across the state line in Idaho with the Aryan Nations in Portland, Oregon, open shit, KKK literature regularly appeared in the affluent neighborhoods I lived in and worked in, and I went to school with teens who openly advocated for white separatism. All that is to say that I understand why many people currently feel like fighting Nazis and fascism ought to be central to current anarchism, even if I would put a question mark where they would put an exclamation point. The internet also happened. This is both positive and negative. If you were going to be an anarchist 28 years ago, so 89, 90-ish, it meant a lot of isolation. It meant working to meet people with similar ideas. A-News, or IGD, or Crime Think, at least as it now exists, or what have you, didn't exist. There were zines and some newspapers and journals, but even that shit was hard to find. I first found not punk-centric anarchist stuff because I recognized titles of papers or magazines, Love and Rage, Ajota, Fifth Estate, or the names of authors, Emma, Chomsky, from punk sources like Profane Existence. I learned about a lot of the ideas that were formative from record inserts from labels like Excursion Records, PE, or Discord, and bands like Crass, etc. I'm not going to say that it is easy to get connected with Anarchy Land now. I doubt it is. But the lack of resources led to a great diversity of what people thought anarchy should look like, a lot of cross-pollinated but distinctly localized sorts of action. I know people who think it was better being something one had to almost go on a quest to find. Personally, I'm not sure. I'm excited when teens have a rudimentary awareness of anarchism, even if I don't like the ism, even if it ain't my corner of that big tent. I love having resources like theanarchistlibrary.org. And that searching, that figuring out what I would consume based on raw ingredients, as opposed to being presented with a menu of options I could order, was important to my development. As always, if you don't like these answers or have your own question to ask, visit anarchy101.org and join the conversation. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel, narrated by Aragorn and Chisel. Thanks to Aragorn and Gigawatt for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackcart.com, and news and up-to-the-minute commentary, always at anarchistnews.org.